we were singing Amazing Grace, I couldn't help but think about our friends over at the nursing home. And as I understand, they've just opened the nursing home back up for single visitors. So maybe sometime later this year, they'll open it up where we could get back over and do our nursing home ministry deal. It's tiring and it's laborsome, but it's also a joy. And I know that if that was my mother or father there, I would sure be encouraged by somebody coming to see them and preach a little bit of Jesus to them and sing a little bit to them. So anyway, just pray about that as well. In your Bibles now this afternoon, 2 Samuel chapter number 10, we are continuing our study of this book, and really it focuses a great deal on the life and kingship of David. David, we've subtitled the series, A Heart to Rule or Heart to Obey, A Desire to Rule in the Fear of God, Ruling in the Fear of God. And chapter 10 serves as a bridge to what we have seen about David in his rise, his power, prestige, if you will, and then the downfall of David in chapter 11. We're going to have a guest speaker the next couple Sunday afternoons, so we won't get there right away, but chapter 10 and the events of this chapter are directly related to chapter 11 and what goes on there. But we see really in chapter 9, do you remember mercy to Mephibosheth? David saying, are there any left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness, or the house of Jonathan that I may show him kindness? And we see the best of David. He is sitting on the throne. He's ruling over one of, if not the most powerful nations on earth at the time. Incredibly successful military, money and might. Yet he wants to extend kindness. And in chapter 9, he extends kindness to Mephibosheth, this cripple. Crippled by a fall, not because of who Mephibosheth was, but because of who his father was. And we see now in chapter 10, David again showing kindness. Now it is interesting that in chapter 9, David extends his kindness to one of the covenant people, to his fellow Jew, even if he is a cripple named Mephibosheth. But in chapter 10, David will reach out a hand of kindness to those who are outside God's covenant people. Mephibosheth humbly, warmly, graciously receives the kindness of the king. Yet in our story, this pagan ruler will reject the kindness of the king. All right? And that is just the way it is. If you got to keep in mind that while we're studying the life of David, it's just a shadow of the son of David. Who there are those who receive the king's kindness humbly, graciously, thankful that God has shown or the king has shown them mercy, and there are others who reject the king's kindness. Even though he extends his hand to them, they reject it. And that's what you'll see from this chapter. I want to read together chapter 10, and then we'll actually pull three thoughts from this chapter. 2 Samuel 10, and it came to pass after this that the king of the children of Ammon died, and Hanun, and that man, his name and place is important, and Hanun, his son, reigned in his stead. Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanun, the son of Nahash, as his father showed kindness unto me. And David sent to comfort him by the hand of his servants for his father. And David's servants came into the land of the children of Ammon, or Ammon. And the princes of the children of Ammon said unto Hanun their lord, thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father, that he has sent comforters unto thee? Hath not David rather sent his servants unto thee,
to search the city and to spy it and to overthrow it. Wherefore, Hanun took David's servants and shaved off the one half of their beards and cut off their garments in the middle, even to their buttocks, and sent them away. When they told it unto David, he sent to meet them, because the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, "Tarry at Jericho until your beards be grown, and then return." And when the children of Ammon saw that they stank, and that is quite literally what the Hebrew means, that they foul odor before David, the children of Ammon sent and hired the Syrians of Beth Rehob and the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 footmen, and of King Maacah, 1,000 men, and of Ishtob, 12,000 men. And when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the host of the mighty men. And the children of Ammon or Ammon came out and put the battle in array, the entering in of the gate. And the Syrians of Zobah and of Rehob and Ishtob and Maacah were by themselves in the field. When Joab saw that the front of the battle was against him before and behind, he chose of all the choice men of Israel and put them in array against the Syrians. And the rest of the people he delivered into the hand of Abishai, his brother, that he might put them in array against the children of Ammon. And he said, "If the Syrians be too strong for me, then thou shalt help me. But if the children of Ammon be too strong for thee, then I will come and help thee. Be of good courage. And let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God, and the Lord do that which seemeth him good." And Joab drew nigh, and the people that were with him, and the battle, unto the battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the children of Ammon saw that the Syrians were fled, then fled they also before Abishai, and entered into the city. So Joab returned from the children of Ammon and came to Jerusalem. And when the Syrians saw that they were smitten before Israel, they gathered themselves together. So there's going to be a part two to this battle. That's what this is. And Hadarezer sent and brought out the Syrians that were beyond the river, and they came to Helam. And Shobak, the captain of the host of Hadarezer, went before them. And when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and passed over Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians set themselves in array against David and fought with him. And the Syrians again fled before Israel. And David slew the men of 700 chariots of the Syrians and 40,000 horsemen, and smote Shobak, the captain of their host, who died there. And when all the kings that were servants to Hadarezer saw that they were smitten before Israel, they made peace with Israel and served them. So the Syrians feared to help the children of Ammon any more, rejecting the king's kindness. Rejecting the king's kindness. So this chapter opens with the death of a king. You see this, it came to pass that the king of the children of Ammon died, and his son Hanun reigned in his stead. Now we do not know all of the details of the relationship that existed between David and between this king, Nahash, over Ammon. Now, the people of Ammon, they lived southeast Transjordan, on the other side of the Jordan, really down towards the other side of the Dead Sea from Israel. The Ammonites were the descendants of this incestuous relationship of Lot. They were a pagan people, led, you know, given over to idolatry. But it seems like, and from it really every commentator that I read, that it is very likely that in the years that David spent running for his life from King Saul, some of that time would have been spent there in Ammon or Ammon, and he established somewhat of a friendship or a relationship, friendly relationship with the king of the Ammonites. And so David says, and this is important,
In verse number 2, then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanun, the son of Nahash. And that's who it is seemingly that David, during his time of hiding and running from Saul, had built this relationship with Nahash. As his father showed kindness unto me. Now, I don't want to lay down and cry right up here in the pulpit. But, just to check your brain, David says in verse number 2, I'm going to show kindness. Can you tell me what that Hebrew word is there? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. He says the exact same thing about Mephibosheth. I'm going to extend chesed. Chesed. There's that word. You remember I said it so much you probably wanted to smack me upside the head. Chesed. It is an important Hebrew word. And it deals with covenant loyalty. Kindness is translated as kindness, mercy, long-suffering. Newer translations translated as steadfast love. And so David in chapter 9, in that prior chapter, extends chesed, steadfast love, to Mephibosheth because of who his father is. And now in chapter 10, David is again attempting to extend chesed, steadfast love, covenant love, to this man Hanun because of who his father is. That's just an important word, and I want you to learn that word, and it'll help you in your studies. And so David does an admirable thing. At the death of this king, he sends some emissaries. Okay? It is really no different than it is now if some head of state dies, world leader dies, someone who is, you know, a very prominent dies. We will send a delegation, maybe the president, maybe the vice president, maybe senators, you know. We will send a delegation over to show our respect, to pay our condolences. And that's exactly what David is attempting to do here. He had, again, we don't know the details, but there was clearly some type of relationship between David and Nahash or Nahash. And David says, now that he's gone, I want to extend mercy. I want to show kindness. I want to extend chesed to this young prince who is now king. Unfortunately, this young king, Hanun, rejects David's kindness. David's servants, close in verse number 2, they come to the children of Ammon. The princes, and now notice this, the counselors to this new king, the princes of the children of Ammon, say unto Hanun their lord, do you really think David sent these men over here to pay condolences? Do you think they're here out of respect? That's not why they're here. And they get these counselors, these advisors to the king, get in the ear of this young leader now, and they say, man, you don't understand. David sent these men over here to case the joint out. They're over here checking this out, trying to find out where our weaknesses are, areas where they could attack, who's on guard, and where they're on guard, and when they're on guard. He's not over here to extend an olive branch. He's over here to get information, intel, so that he can attack. And they wrongly advise the king that David's intentions are impure. And there, I said I want to take three lessons out of this. And lesson number one, it is foolish to rush to judgment about matters before you really or truly understand what is going on. These young counselors, I can't help, but when I read this, it takes my mind back to when Rehoboam takes over control of Israel. You've got Saul, David, Solomon, and then Solomon's son Rehoboam is supposed to take the crown. And the people come to Rehoboam and they say, listen, man, your dad made life hard on us. How about you, you know, you make things a little bit easier for us and we'll serve you. And instead of Rehoboam listening to the older, wiser counselors, he listens to his young counselors who don't have as much experience or wisdom. And Rehoboam says, man, you think my dad was hard? I'm going to really pour it on him. Which led to the division of the nation. That's how we ended up with the 10 and 2 tribes. The northern tribe of Judah, northern tribes of Israel, southern tribes of Judah. All because they rushed to judgment. And in this case, here these men attribute some nefarious, you know, conduct to David and his emissaries. And they rushed to judgment. And the Bible tells us that there is safety in the multitude of counselors. Yet that is only true when those counselors are godly or wise counselors. These counselors fill Hanun's head up with a bunch of junk. Now, Proverbs 18:13 says, it is folly to rush to judgment on a matter before you hear the whole thing. Now, here's what I got to ask you. Are you prone to jump to conclusions about people? I am. That is a real problem I have. I am confessing this. This is part of the tiger DNA. It is a tiger trait. We are really good at jumping to conclusions. Now, that doesn't mean others don't. I just know it has been a real problem for me and it's got me in trouble in the past that I attribute nefarious intentions to somebody and they may have good intentions. In my head, I think I know what they're doing and why they're doing it, but, you know, it is foolish. We need to learn not to rush to judgment. Doesn't it bother you when someone assumes the worst out of you rather than giving you the benefit of the doubt? That doesn't bother you? When somebody jumps to conclusions about you or thinks that you're doing something that you're actually not doing, when they point the finger, I can't help really, as our church has over the last several years has been subject of criticism from other assemblies, I thought, rather than going to the source and really talking to us, it's much easier to jump to conclusions, to make up your mind or whatever that it is, and listen to somebody else instead of talking to us. And that's wrong. So we should learn not to do that to others. So lesson number one from this is it is foolish to rush to judgment about matters before you know the whole story. And this is what happens. These men tell Hanun, hey, they over here scoping the place out. David plans on attacking. He wants to know what our weaknesses are. He's looking for, you know, weaknesses in our lines of defense. And that's why they're here. And so in response to that, Hanun, verse number 4, took these emissaries, these servants of David, and shaved off one half of their beards and cut their garments in half from the waist down. Now, in particular in Jewish life, one's beard represented their manliness, their manhood. There's some of that still around, but not as much. But in particular in Jewish life, their beards represented maturity, wisdom, manliness. And for them to take, and I think probably shaving off one half of that, it's just intended to humiliate them. Now, Hanun and his men could have simply sent the servants of David away and said, we don't trust you. We don't think you're here for good reasons. We don't think you're here to offer condolences. We're thinking, you know, you're here for this. They could have just sent them away, but no, that wasn't enough. They had to humiliate them. And it is almost as if they're trying to pick a fight. And so they reject the king's kindness by taking these men, shaving off half their beard, taking their probably their robes, their clothing, and cutting them off just at the waist and leaving them exposed. Now here these men are, over 50 miles from home, on the other side of the Jordan River, half their beards shaved, their clothing ripped off so that they are exposed, and you can just imagine the laughter and ridicule and mockery of these Ammonites as they just humiliated these Jewish emissaries on their way out of town. He does this to them, and then to close the verse 4, then kicks them out of town. How humiliating that this is. And now I want you to get this. Object lesson number 2. Number 1 is foolish to rush to judgment. Number 2, servants of the king can expect to be rejected and ridiculed. Servants of the king can be expected, or can expect, to be hated and humiliated, rejected and ridiculed. Did Jesus not say, the servant is not above his master? If they have done this to me, they will do this to you. Now, you have to understand, and you got to think big picture. We in America have enjoyed an unprecedented level of freedom like no other group of Christians have ever enjoyed. Throughout the history of our nation, we have been free to worship God really. From the founding up until the last maybe 100 years or so, a little less even, it has been encouraged, expected that we honor the God of the Bible, and I'm talking nationally. However, we see that coming to an end in our own country. We see as the growth of pluralism and I'm not a political preacher, I'm not, but when we see the death of true conservatism, the moral fabric of our society unraveling, and here it is, when we see God's hand of judgment just like in Romans 1 poured out on our nation, there's something that you and I need to prepare for. That is, if we live long enough, even here in our nation, servants of the king can expect to be rejected and ridiculed. Now listen, even now, one of the reasons why we don't receive more of it now is we're not as salty or as bright a light as we should have been. I think all of us will confess to that. We're too interested in fitting in and conforming than we are standing out. But if you will now take a stand for truth and righteousness and holiness, it's going to cost you. And I promise you, if our Lord tarries and things continue as they are in our nation, you're going to have to make up your mind whether or not you're going to believe God and promote biblical truth or not. When they come in, and I'm serious about this, you guys sitting in the pew, you think I'm joking or jesting, but when they come in, the pew police come in and they start monitoring my messages and, like they have done in different places in our country now where they've demanded that preachers submit their sermons for pre-approval. When this happens, and we take a biblical stand against homosexuality, against same-sex marriage, continue to speak out against abortion, when we do these things, then we're going to find out that this world is not our home. Not even the good old U.S. of A. in Old Glory is here to protect you. That we find our freedom in Christ and not in the Constitution.
So you and I need to be thinking this way, preparing this, that servants of the King, are we not ambassadors for King Jesus? Has He not called us? We're to live here as if we were living for heaven. But listen, our American freedoms are being eradicated, and if Christ does not come, things continue as they are, then those of us who take a biblical stand and endeavor to stand for biblical morality, we're going to be hated and humiliated. Don't think this world will not point their fingers, joke and jest, as they ridicule and reject servants of the King. They did it to Him. Now, did Jesus have any cruel, conniving purposes in anything that He did? No. All He did was He came to extend chesed, steadfast love and kindness, and yet people rushed to judgment about Him, and they rejected Him. And listen, the servant is not above his master. Okay? And then, so this provokes war. And well, it should. These Ammonites humiliate these well-intentioned emissaries of David. They humiliate them, send them back home. I'm sure there was a big parade of mockery and ridicule. And in my mind, anyway, they're throwing rotten fruit at these guys on their way out of town. And so David catches wind of this. David finds out about it. He tells these men to stay at Jericho. Just cross over the river. Get back into Israeli territory. Stay there until your beards grow back out. And, you know, offering some comfort to them. But David says, now we're going to retaliate. We're not going to put up with this. You're not going to treat our people this way. And so before even David has time to amass his men, his military, verse 6 says the children of Ammon see that they stank before David. And if you get into the Hebrew, that's really, they realize that they were putrid before David, that they stank before him, that they were now like a foul odor before King David. They go and hire a bunch of militia. They bold enough to ridicule David's men, but they're not ready for war. So they go to the Syrians, and they hire a bunch of mercenaries. And this is what they do in verse number 6. They went and hired the Syrians, and you see these different footmen, and Ishtob and all these people. They hire them. And so David goes and he sends his mighty men. He gets Joab. Joab's not a good guy. Joab, he's somebody now. But David dispatches Joab and his mighty men. And here's what happens. And I'm going to just try to paint this picture for you real quick. Joab and his mighty men go out to war, and they surround this city, this Ammonite city. What they don't realize is that these Syrian mercenaries have been hired, and they sneak in behind Joab and his army. And that's exactly what you're going to find as you read this narrative, is that Joab discovers, we're surrounded. They have a city in front of them, this Ammonite city in front of them, and a Syrian mercenaries, hired Syrian army behind them. And so Joab divides his men. He takes the mighty men, and we'll talk about more of them. They're mentioned again. Joab takes the mighty men, and he attacks the Syrians because they're the stronger army, and his brother Abishai is left to attack the Ammonites. And God gives them victory. Now, I'm interested a little bit in this pre-battle speech by Joab. I mean, all of us have seen these movies where William Wallace in the movie Braveheart rides up and down in front of the army giving this big fiery speech to get everyone, you know, zealous and fired up and ready to go to war. Well, Joab does this.
In verse 11, he says, if the Syrians be too strong, you help me. And if the children of Ammon too strong, I'll come help you. And listen to this little pep rally Joab gives. And what we learn from that is even praise can come from the mouth of a fool. Verse 12, be of good courage and let us play the men for our people. Be strong for our people and for the cities of our God. And let the Lord do what He thinks is right. So even words of praise of Yahweh God can fall from the lips of what I do not consider to be a follower of God, Joab. He gives us a little pep rally. The battle ensues. God gives them victory. For a while, you know, it seems bad. They're surrounded and things don't look good. But God gives them victory. The Syrians take off running. The Ammonites, they go running back into the city and hide. And so Joab turns around and he leaves. He goes back to Jerusalem. That's the close of verse number 14. And then you think that'd be the end of it, but it's not. Because then the Ammonites, they're still not happy. It is probable that they were hoping to seize control of some of the land that David had taken. But nonetheless, the king's highway in particular. But nonetheless, verse number 15, the Syrians saw they were smitten. They gathered themselves together, had an Azor sent. So the second group of mercenaries are hired and gathered together to go to war against Joab. And this time in particular, the narrative tells us that David shows up on the battlefield. Verse 17, and when it was told David, he gathered all Israel together and passed over Jordan, came to Helam, and the Syrians set themselves. And again, God grants Israel victory. David, victory. So the third lesson that I have from this, lesson number one, is foolish to judge matters before you hear the whole counsel. Two, servants of the king can expect it to be hated and humiliated. But number three, even if things look bleak, those who reject the king's kindness will be defeated. Even if things look bleak, I imagine as Joab and his brother Abishai are there, and they have the city in front of them, and this mercenary Syrian army to the other side of them, things looked bleak. But let me tell you something. All opposition to King Jesus will fail. Will fail. And those who reject the king's kindness will be defeated. Human rebellion against divine power is folly. Human rebellion against divine power is folly. So all of those, these Syrians are defeated, the Ammonites are defeated, the Syrians, they finally wise up. If you notice that at the close of the chapter, the Syrians say, I don't care how much money them jokers offer us. We're not going to battle with them again. And so they wisen up. And I can't help but as we look at this to think about Psalms chapter 2. And I want to read just at least part of this together. Because you understand, this is what happens to David. But this is also typical of what will happen to the son of David, the Lord Jesus Christ. Even though he came and showed, extended out, quote, an olive branch, even though he came to show chesed, covenant love, he was rejected. His people are and continue to be rejected. There are people in this world right now, emissaries of the king, who are facing severe persecution because they're Christian. But those who reject the king, those who reject the king will ultimately be defeated. The king's kindness will be defeated. Psalms 2, let me read this and then we're going to be done. Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed. Can you not see that gathering group of Ammonites and Syrians and those other mercenaries saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Then he shall speak unto them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. Yet have I set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord said unto me, Thou art my son. This day have I begotten thee. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt, listen to this, those who reject the king's kindness shall be defeated. Thou shalt break them with the rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Be wise now, therefore, O ye kings. Be instructed, ye judges of the earth. Listen to me, O sinner. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and ye perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all they that put their trust in him. I know this is silly, but I'm sometimes silly. Because when I was studying this, I got to thinking about Bruce Banner. You remember mild-mannered Bruce Banner? Everybody should get along with Bruce Banner, but Bruce would tell them, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Because once he became angry, he was no longer the mild-mannered Bruce Banner. He became the Incredible Hulk. Listen, as silly as that sounds, listen. Jesus Christ came to extend kindness. Don't make him angry. You won't like him when he's angry. He doesn't become some beast, but he becomes the righteous king pouring out divine wrath on all those who reject his kindness. Flee to him. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry with you. God bless you. I love you. And next time we get into this text, we've got to take a downturn. David is loving, covenant keeping, his said extending king is gonna mess up.